Well, greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on KU Band Radio at Telstar 5, 7 days a week, on Truth Radio Network, and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and the Editorial Review, please go to my webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on personal identification when we come back right after this message. You know, we Americans are the most litigious people in the world, and we believe in our lawyers with a kind of religious fervor. And we've been taught from early childhood that he who represents himself in court has a fool for a client. But what would you say if a plumber said that? What if a plumber said to you, he who fixes his own pipes has a fool for a client? What if a carpenter said that? A carpenter says to you, he who fixes his own steps has a fool for a client. Now, doesn't our common sense tell us that a plumber or a carpenter who couldn't fix his own pipes or steps is incompetent? Well, my common sense tells me that a lawyer who couldn't represent himself in court has to be just as incompetent as that plumber or carpenter. Now, listen to James Nielsen. He's a professor at the Hastings Law School. Here's what he said about the incompetence of the lawyer profession. He said, quote, it is a fact that a student can graduate from this, the fourth largest law school in the United States, without ever having written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed. He said it's worse than that. Most students actually graduate from this law school without ever having seen a real honest-to-God pleading, contract, will, promissory note, or a deed. And a student can graduate without having set a foot in a courtroom and without ever having spoken to or on behalf of a person in need of advice or counsel. And a student can graduate without once being exposed to the operation of the rules of court. Now, whatever else may be said about this license issued by the state bar, let it be said that for these students and their clients, it is a cruel hoax. That's Professor James Nielsen of the Hastings Law School. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call me at 417-273-4967 and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. Courtroom strategy and procedure is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to my webpage. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Why don't you do that right now before you forget? That's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. Well, a new case has come out. It's called Heibel versus the 6th Judicial District Court of Nevada, Humboldt County, et al. It's argued on certiorari to the Supreme Court of Nevada first and then appealed up to the U.S. Supreme Court. It deals with personal identification. Do you have to identify yourself to a police officer upon demand? 20 states in the United States have those statutes on the books. Numerous cities have those statutes on the books. It was declared unconstitutional in California. It was declared vague and ambiguous in Brown versus Texas in 1979 in Texas. The Supreme Court ruled in both Lawson versus Colander and Brown versus Texas that you don't have to identify yourself to a police officer upon demand. Now, I'm not talking about driving an automobile when the policeman tells you, I want to see your driver's license. That's another cat of a different stripe. But just say that you're walking down the street and a police officer makes a Terry stop and frisk. He thinks that you're casing the joint, you're getting ready to rob somebody, or some crime is either about to be committed, has been committed, or you are in the process of committing it. Terry versus Ohio has been ruled on a number of times, and it's a part and parcel of our criminal jurisprudence, just like Miranda versus Arizona and your Miranda warning. And how about this thing, though, of identification? Walking down the street, you're doing something, and the policeman demands that you identify yourself to him. Do you have to do that? Well, in both Brown, Lawson, and Delaware versus Prowse, and in addition, Terry versus Ohio, the answer to that is no. But in Heibel, the court distinguished the Heibel case from Terry, Prowse, Brown, and Lawson. The law remains exactly the same, but there are some new rules that go along with it. Now, when you refuse to identify yourself, the burden is on you to show that there's a Fifth Amendment or a Fourth Amendment issue right there at the scene of the alleged crime. So those of us that want to know and understand it, stand by, and we're going to cover Heibel versus the 6th Judicial District Court of Nevada, Humboldt County. The petitioner, Heibel, was arrested and convicted in a Nevada court for refusing to identify himself to a police officer during an investigative stop. Involving a reported assault, Nevada's stop and identify statute requires a person detained by an officer under suspicious circumstances to identify himself. The state intermediate appellate court affirmed, rejecting Heibel's argument that the state law's application to his case violated the Fourth and Fifth Amendments. The Nevada Supreme Court affirmed, and it was held that the petitioner's conviction does not violate his Fourth Amendment rights or the Fifth Amendment's prohibition on self-incrimination. State stop and identify statutes often combine elements of traditional vagrancy laws with provisions intended to regulate police behavior in the course of investigatory stops. They vary from state to state, but all permit an officer to ask or require a suspect to disclose his identity. In Papa Cristo v. Jacksonville, this court invalidated a traditional vagrancy law for vagueness because of its broad scope and imprecise terms. The court recognized similar constitutional limitations in Brown v. Texas, where it invalidated a conviction for violating a Texas stop and identify statute on Fourth Amendment grounds. And in Colander v. Lawson, where we invalidated on vagueness grounds California's modified stop and identify statute that required a suspect to give an officer credible and reliable identification when he was asked to identify himself. This case begins where those cases left off. Now, in this case, the initial stop was based on reasonable suspicion, satisfying the Fourth Amendment requirement noted in Brown. Further, Heibel has not alleged that the Nevada statute is unconstitutionally vague, as in Colander. This statute is narrower and more precise. In contrast to the credible and reliable identification requirement in Colander, the Nevada Supreme Court has interpreted the instant statute to require only that a suspect disclose his name. It apparently does not require him to produce a driver's license or any other document. And if he chooses either to state his name or communicate it to the officer by other means, the statute is satisfied and no violation occurs. Now, this opinion came out on June 21st, 2004. Before the day was over, I had three or four calls, and in the ensuing days, I have probably had 30 inquiries from students all across the country asking me, well, does this overturn Brown versus Texas and Lawson versus Colander? The answer to that is no, it doesn't. What it does is that it distinguishes this case from Brown and Lawson. Now, many times people will read a newspaper article, I know I have, concerning the Supreme Court's rulings, and there'll be a brash headline that says, Supreme Court guts Fourth Amendment, or Supreme Court overturns Fifth Amendment, or Supreme Court does this or that to the First Amendment. And those headlines are actually predicated upon the old Hearst principle of yellow journalism. You create this bogus headline that shocks everybody to get you to read the article, to read the story. The story may have some true facts, some error, mixed together, which leads you to an erroneous conclusion. So I've always recommended to my students that you get your law directly from the Supreme Court, not from the newspaper, Dan Rather, or the Lair NewsHour. Now, the Lair NewsHour is a case in point. On the day that this case was decided, June 21st, there was a report on the Lair NewsHour, and when I got through listening to that report, it appeared to me that from now on, every American, under every circumstance, when stopped by a policeman, must identify himself or go to jail. That the Supreme Court has overturned Brown and Lawson. They've changed the law. Now, that was the conclusion that I came to based upon what I heard on the Lair NewsHour on June 21st. So I asked the boy to go look up the case, and so you can do the same thing. Just go to your webpage to find law. And the case number is 03-5554. Again, that's number 03-5554. I won't give you the find law address here because it's too long, but you can find it on Google or Yahoo. And if you'll take a look here, what you're looking at here is a Supreme Court case. The name is Heibel, H-I-I-B-E-L, versus 6th Judicial District. I think if you plug that in, you'll get the case. It's 13 pages long. The case was decided narrowly, 5-4. Now, I think the case was decided incorrectly. I side with the minority. The minority view in the Heibel case was nobody need identify himself for any cause or reason at any time to any peace officer, period. The majority, though, said, well, you don't have to identify yourself to a peace officer if you've got a legitimate Fourth and Fifth Amendment reason not to, or if the statute in your state is vague and ambiguous, but you're going to have to make the argument. You see, up until Heibel, we never had to make the argument, as in Miranda versus Arizona. I don't have to ask you if I have rights if you're a policeman who's arrested me and now wants to question me. Prior to Miranda, you had to know that you had a Fifth Amendment right to remain silent. Now, for the majority of Americans, the Constitution and Bill of Rights doesn't mean anything. For 99.9% of Americans, that is, you get 275 million Americans out there, and I doubt seriously that there's more than 100,000, certainly not more than a million people in America, that know what their constitutional rights are and how to apply them. There's about 600,000 lawyers in the country, and I'm not sure that the 600,000 lawyers know how to apply their constitutional rights. I'm certain that all or at least the vast majority of judges do, and I would suspect that most of the lawyers, that's over half of them, do. So we might have a million people in the country, max, total, top, outside fringe included, that might know what their constitutional rights are. So I'm one of those, and I'm concerned about my Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights. I'm concerned about unconstitutional laws, and so I take the time to go through cases like this and come up to a conclusion, so that I've developed 12 or 13 questions, which I'll give you a little later on, as to what it is we need to do if you want to apply your Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights to this Heibel case. Now, hang on a minute, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, those who already walk submissively will say that there's no cause for alarm, but submissiveness is not our heritage. The First Amendment was designed to allow rebellion to remain as our heritage as Americans. The Constitution was designed to keep government off the backs of the people, and the Bill of Rights was added to keep the precincts of belief and expression of the press, of political and social activities, free from government surveillance. Now, you know, I wish I'd have thought of that, but that quotation, that opinion, comes from Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas. Now, our princes and our politicians beller in the halls of Congress for more taxes, more spending, and more gun control, but you and I haven't heard anything intelligent come out of a politician's mouth in more than 75 years. And that's why I contend that the only real reason, logic, or common sense left in America comes from our courts, not from the political process, certainly not from politicians, lawyers, or bureaucrats. You know, old Mayor Rothschild summed it up with a flair when he said, "You give me the money power, and I care not who makes the laws." Well, I'd like to echo that by saying, you give me the judicial power, and I care not who makes the laws either, because the real power in America is in our courts, not in our political process. Now, if you'd like to tap into that power of the courts, why don't you call me at 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for my free general law CD package while you're at it. Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. It's entertaining, educational, it's informative, best of all, it's free of charge. Now, courtroom strategy and procedures available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Why don't you do that right now before you forget? That's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about this new case, Stop and Frisk. It's called the Terry Stop and Frisk, but it's been applied to a case called Heibel, H-I-I-B-E-L, versus 6th Judicial District, decided June 21st, 2004. Go to Find Law on the web, and you can get a copy. It's 13 pages. Now, the officer's conduct did not violate Heibel's Fourth Amendment rights. Ordinarily, an investigating officer is free to ask a person for identification without implicating the amendment. You'll see that in INS versus Delgado. And beginning with Terry versus Ohio, the court has recognized that an officer's reasonable suspicion, let's underline that term, reasonable suspicion, that a person may be involved in criminal activity permits the officer to stop the person for a brief time and then take additional steps to investigate further. And although it is well established that an officer may ask a suspect to identify himself during a Terry stop, it has been an open question as to whether the suspect can be arrested and prosecuted for refusal to answer. See Brown versus Texas. Now, the court is now of the view that Terry principles permit a state to require a suspect to disclose his name in the course of a Terry stop. The Nevada statute is consistent with Fourth Amendment prohibitions against unreasonable searches and seizures because it properly balances the intrusion on the individual's interests against the promotion of legitimate government interests. And you'll see that in Delaware versus Prowse. An identity request has an immediate relation to the Terry stop's purpose, the rationale, and the practical demands and the threat of criminal sanctions help ensure that the request does not become a legal nullity. On the other hand, the statute does not alter the nature of the stop itself, changing neither its duration nor its location. Heibel argues unpersuasively that the statute circumvents the probable cause requirement by allowing an officer to arrest a person for being suspicious, thereby creating an impermissible risk of arbitrary police conduct. These familiar concerns underlay Colander, Brown, and Papachristou. They are met by the requirement that a Terry stop be justified at its inception and be reasonably related, let's underline the term, reasonably related, in scope to the circumstances which justified the initial stop in the first place. Now remember, we've got two words here. We've got reasonable suspicion and reasonably related. We'll analyze those terms as the court shows us as we progress. Under those principles, an officer may not arrest a suspect for failure to identify himself if the identification request is not reasonably related to the circumstances justifying the stop. The request in this case was a common sense inquiry, not an effort to obtain an arrest for failure to identify after a Terry stop yielded insufficient evidence. The stop and request and the state's requirement of a response did not contravene the Fourth Amendment. Now, Heibel's contention that his conviction violates the Fifth Amendment's prohibition on self-incrimination fails because disclosure of his name and identity presented no reasonable danger of incrimination. The Fifth Amendment prohibits only compelled testimony that is incriminating. All right, let's pause here for a moment. The Fifth Amendment prohibits only compelled testimony that is incriminating. So compelling you to give your name, if it is incriminating, then you've got a right to remain silent. But if it's not incriminating, well, then you don't have a right to withhold your name during a Terry stop and frisk pursuant to the Fourth Amendment. Now remember, the Terry stop and frisk is a Fourth Amendment issue, and the court is making its analysis based upon the Terry stop and frisk. It's making a Fourth Amendment analysis here. Now, Heibel was leaning up against his pickup, as we're going to see, and his daughter was sitting inside. Somebody had called the police and reported that the young woman in the pickup was being beaten up. A policeman, a deputy sheriff, came out to investigate, and when he got there, he asked Heibel what his name was. Heibel said, "Kiss off, I'm not telling." He asked him 11 times, and Heibel told him 11 times, "Kiss off." Now, it would seem more reasonable to me for the police officer to approach the woman and ask her if she had been assaulted. And had she said, "Yes, I've been assaulted," well, then who assaulted you? Well, that man standing right there, which in this case would have been her father. Then the policeman didn't need to know who he was at all. He could have said, "I'm going to arrest you, John Doe, Sam Spade, or whoever you are, for assaulting this woman, and that's the end of the argument. We'll talk about your name later on." But for whatever reason, the police officer, using the state statute, of which 20 states have the statute on the books, said, "What's your name?" Heibel says, "Kiss off, I'm not telling you." So the policeman arrests him on the grounds that he's violated the state statute. Heibel later asserts his Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights. As we're going to see, that's a fatal error here, because in the future, you're going to have to establish right here at the scene of the crime your Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights. We'll discuss that later in our analysis. So Heibel's contention that his conviction violated the Fifth Amendment's prohibition on self-incrimination fails because disclosure of his name and identity presented no reasonable danger of incrimination. Heibel needed to create that reasonable danger of incrimination or to raise that issue, and he didn't do that. Now, the Fifth Amendment prohibits only compelled testimony that is incriminating. Now, we can compel testimony from you, and it doesn't violate the Fifth Amendment, as long as the information that's being compelled does not incriminate you in any criminal complaint or case. So you can be subpoenaed into court and compelled to testify. And if you're going to use the Fifth Amendment, you have to show that there is a reasonable expectation that the compelled testimony that you're about to give is going to, in some way, incriminate you either in this case that we're involved in and asking you this information, or in a subsequent criminal case, such as we want to know if you filed your 1999 federal tax return. If you answer the question yes, and you actually did not, we're compelling you to commit perjury. If, on the other hand, you did not, and I ask you, did you file your 1999 tax return, and you say, "No, I did not," then I've compelled you to admit then that you violated the law. So then you would say, "Well, will you give me immunity from prosecution for asking and answering this question?" And if the court says, "No, we will not give you immunity from prosecution," then you need to carry it a step further and say, "Okay, I'm going to answer the question. But when I do, the court is compelling testimony from me that could be the beginning point of a criminal investigation for which the court has refused to give me immunity. This compels me then to incriminate myself in violation of my Fifth Amendment right to remain silent." Answer: "No, I did not file my 1999 tax return." Now, with a record set like that, you've been compelled to give testimony against yourself. It can't be used against you in court. That's the purpose behind this whole exercise. You don't just tell the policeman, "No, I'm not going to tell you who I am, go kiss off." You've got to have a rational basis for telling him no. Obviously, you could be standing on a street corner as a witness to an auto accident, and the policeman comes up and says, "Gee, give me your name and address. Let me ask you a few questions about what you saw here, what you heard, what you know." And you say, "Hey, Buster, kiss off. I don't want to get involved." You see, as a citizen, we all have a duty whether we like it or not, to testify in a case where we may accidentally be a witness. We may even be required to testify in a civil case against somebody that we know or like or don't want to testify against. But if we know something and it's relevant to the case, we have a duty to testify. That's what citizenship and civilization is all about. Now, it protects only against disclosures. This Fifth Amendment protects only against disclosures that the witness may reasonably believe could be used in a criminal prosecution or could lead to other evidence that might be so used. Heibel's refusal to disclose was not based on any articulated, real, and appreciable fear that his name would be used to incriminate him or that it would furnish evidence needed to prosecute him. It appears he refused to identify himself only because he thought his name was none of the officer's business. And while the court recognizes his strong belief that he should not have to disclose his identity, the Fifth Amendment does not override the Nevada legislature's judgment to the contrary, absent a reasonable belief that the disclosure would tend to incriminate him. So Heibel's job then was to create a reasonable belief that the disclosure would tend to incriminate him. Answering a request to disclose a name is likely to be so insignificant as to be incriminating only in very unusual circumstances. Now, if a case should arise where there is a substantial allegation that furnishing identity at the time of a stop would have given the police a link in a chain of evidence needed to convict the individual of a separate offense, the court can then consider whether the Fifth Amendment privilege applies, whether it's been violated, and what remedy must follow. These questions need not be resolved here in this case. Now, there's the answer to the riddle right there. If in the future a case arises where you are being compelled to testify against yourself, the court will review that. So your job then is to create that event. Your job is to create the appealable error. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, we Americans may hold the dubious honor of being the most litigious people in the world, but when it comes to law, we seem to be among the most ignorant. Today, most Americans feel powerless to resist the evils that they see perpetrated against our liberties, privacy, and property by powerful government agencies, multinational corporations, lobbies, and the news media. But you know, we don't have to remain helpless. The situation, the institution designed by God and incorporated into our Constitution and Bill of Rights, is called the judicial power. And our courts are the proper repository for the protection of our rights, liberties, and property, not the Congress or the political process. That's the problem, not the solution. Now, did you know that the privilege against self-incrimination is neither accorded to the passive resistant, nor to the person who is ignorant of his rights, not to one who is indifferent thereto, because it is a fighting clause, and its benefits can be retained only by sustained combat. It cannot be claimed by an attorney or solicitor. It is valid only when insisted upon by a belligerent claimant in person. So says the court in United States versus Johnson. That's why I contend that we should listen more to the judges and less to the politicians and lawyers. Now, did you hear what that judge said in that statement? He said plainly that your rights cannot be claimed by your attorney or solicitor. Your rights can only be claimed by you, the belligerent claimant, in person. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call me at 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. Remember, it's entertaining, educational, informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. Courtroom strategy and procedures available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, go to the website georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Why don't you do that right now before you forget? That's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're doing an analysis here of Heibel versus 6th Judicial District Court. Subject matter is, do you have to identify yourself to a police officer? The answer in 20 states by statute is yes, you do. But there are exceptions to the rule called 4th and 5th Amendment under Brown v. Texas, Lawson versus Colander, and Terry versus Ohio. Knowing how to distinguish Heibel and use your 4th and 5th Amendment rights is the subject of our analysis. Now, Justice Kennedy delivered the opinion of the court. Here's what the opinion of the majority says. The petitioner was arrested and convicted for refusing to identify himself during a stop allowed by Terry versus Ohio. He challenges his conviction under the Fourth and Fifth Amendments to the United States Constitution, applicable to the states through the 14th Amendment. So the Fifth Amendment is applicable to the states through the 14th Amendment. Now, the Sheriff's Department in Humboldt County, Nevada, received an afternoon telephone call reporting an assault. The caller reported seeing a man assault a woman in a red and silver GMC truck on Grass Valley Road. Deputy Sheriff Lee Dove was dispatched to investigate. When the officer arrived at the scene, he found the truck parked on the side of the road. A man was standing by the truck, and a young woman was sitting inside the truck. The officer observed skid marks in the gravel behind the vehicle, leading him to believe that it had come to a sudden stop. So the officer approached the man and explained that he was investigating a report of a fight. Well, the man appeared to be intoxicated, and the officer asked him if he had any identification on him, which we understand as a request to produce a driver's license or some other form of written identification. Well, the man refused and asked why the officer wanted to see identification. So the officer responded that he was conducting an investigation and he needed to see some identification. The unidentified man became agitated and insisted that he had done nothing wrong. The officer explained that he wanted to find out who the man was and what he was doing there. After continued refusals to comply with the officer's request for identification, the man began to taunt the officer by placing his hands behind his back and telling the officer to arrest him and take him to jail. This routine kept up for several minutes. The officer asked for identification 11 times and was refused each time. After warning the man that he would be arrested if he continued to refuse to comply, the officer placed him under arrest. We now know that the man arrested on Grass Valley Road is Larry Dudley Heibel. Heibel was charged with willfully resisting, delaying, or obstructing a public officer in discharging or attempting to discharge any legal duty of his office in violation of Nevada Revised Statute 199.280. The government reasoned that Heibel had obstructed the officer in carrying out his duties under Section 171.123, a Nevada statute that defines the legal rights and duties of a police officer in the context of an investigative stop. And Section 171.123 provides in relevant part, quote, any peace officer may detain any person whom the officer encounters under circumstances which reasonably indicate that the person has committed, is committing, or is about to commit a crime. And the officer may detain the person pursuant to this section only to ascertain his identity and the suspicious circumstances surrounding his presence abroad. Any person so detained shall identify himself, but may not be compelled to answer any other inquiry of any peace officer. So Heibel was tried in the Justice Court of Union Township. The court agreed that Heibel's refusal to identify himself as required by Nevada Statute 171.123 obstructed and delayed Dove as a public officer in attempting to discharge his duty, and he did that in violation of 199.280. Heibel was convicted and fined $250. The 6th Judicial District Court affirmed, rejecting Heibel's argument that the application of 171.123 to his case violated the 4th and 5th Amendments. On review, the Supreme Court of Nevada rejected the Fourth Amendment challenge in a divided opinion, and Heibel petitioned for rehearing, seeking explicit resolution of his Fifth Amendment challenge. The petition was denied without opinion, so we granted certiorari, cited at 540 U.S. 965 in 2003. Now, the NRS 171.123 statute is an enactment sometimes referred to as a stop and identify statute. 20 states have this statute, including states like Delaware, Florida, Georgia, Kansas, Louisiana, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, New Hampshire, New Mexico, New York, North Dakota, Rhode Island, Utah, Vermont, Wisconsin. I think that's about all of them. And they refer to Lawson versus Colander and Brown versus Texas. Now, stop and identify statutes often combine elements of traditional vagrancy laws with provisions intended to regulate police behavior in the course of investigatory stops. I might pause right here to point out that vagrancy laws were struck down by the Supreme Court as being unconstitutional back in 1964. Now, there's an interesting aside that goes along with that. Now, you'll notice here that in the Lawson versus Colander case, that was a stop and identify statute in California back in the 1980s. California is no longer in this list of 20 states that have that. They took it off the books, evidently, after Colander had won his case in the Supreme Court in 1985. It's not that the stop and identify statutes are unconstitutional per se. It's the way these unconstitutional stop and identify statutes are written. The Nevada statute has been narrowly tailored to just the name for the purposes of identification only. And the court in Davis versus Mississippi said that you can take fingerprints for the purposes of identification, but not for the purposes of investigation without consent or without a court order. Now, how do you know that these fingerprints are going to be taken exclusively for the purpose of identification only and not for investigation? Same thing is true here. How do you know that this identification that you're voluntarily giving under this Nevada statute is going to be used for the purposes of identification only and not for the purposes of investigation? For instance, if I gave this officer my name, is he going to run that through NCIC and find that there's a warrant out for my arrest and then arrest me because of that warrant? Wouldn't that then be compelled testimony against myself? Well, I believe that it would. And it's for that reason that I develop a series of questions to ask the officer at the scene of the crime to establish that the officer is in fact seeking testamentary evidence from me to be used against me, which violates my Fifth Amendment right to remain silent. Now remember, up until this Heibel case, we presumed that our remaining silence was simply a Fifth Amendment right, and we exercised it. The court has now distinguished that right and said you have to claim it at the time that you're being asked for your name. So let's suppose Heibel had said, well, are you going to use my name in any way against me? I'm sure the policeman would have said, well, no. Is the giving to you of my name going to incriminate me in any way? Well, no, of course not. If the policeman said, yes, your name is going to incriminate you, then it would be simple to say, well, then I'm going to exercise my Fifth Amendment right to remain silent. After the policeman says, no, we're only going to use it for identification purposes. We're not going to use it for investigation, and it's never going to be used against you in any other case. Good. Well, then would you just give me an affidavit or give me immunity from prosecution from anything that I'm going to say, and I'll be happy to say it. Otherwise, I'm afraid that you're going to take my name, run it through NCIC, find a warrant for my arrest and arrest me. And if you think that's far-fetched, how many of you listening to me right now have called the Marshal Service to find out if there's any warrants out for your arrest? And if you haven't, how do you know there aren't any? Just because I don't believe there are any warrants out for my arrest today doesn't mean that there aren't any warrants out for my arrest. And if I were to give you my name, it would be the beginning point of a criminal investigation that could be used against me personally. And that's what I'm afraid of. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, the lessons on courtroom strategy and procedure that you hear on this program are just a small part of my two-week basic courtroom strategy and procedure school. And this class includes lessons on what to do and what not to do at the arrest or when you're served with a summons, a citation, or a complaint. And rule number one is don't say anything, keep your mouth shut, and shut up. Now, if you can learn rule one, you can win about 86% of your legal cases because all of the evidence that's ever going to be used against you is going to be furnished by you. Your government is fully capable of making their own case without any help from you whatsoever. Now listen to what the courts have to say about keeping quiet in the face of police interrogation and indeed, in many cases, police intimidation. The first judge put it this way. He said, who would believe the ironic truth that the cooperative taxpayer fares much worse than the individual who relies upon his constitutional rights? He said that in U.S. versus Dickerson. The second judge said, you can and must keep your mouth shut for protection under the Fifth Amendment in Belknap versus United States. The third judge put it this way. He said the constitutional privilege was intended to shield the guilty and the imprudent as well as the innocent and the farsighted in Marchetti versus United States. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call me at 417-273-4967 and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. It's entertaining, educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. Courtroom strategy and procedure is available on compact disc for adult home education. That's not free. And if you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org, click onto the email and send me an email request for what is free. And that's the general law CD package. That's the place to start. Get some free information. You can do it right now before you forget. Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're doing an analysis here on stop and frisk. It's called the Terry Stop and Frisk. It's applied to a fellow named Heibel. Heibel was stopped, and he was asked to identify himself. He said, no, I'm not going to identify myself. It's none of your business. The Supreme Court ruled against him, distinguished his case from Brown versus Texas and Lawson versus Colander, which are both Fourth and Fifth Amendment cases. And what we're doing here is analyzing the Supreme Court's opinion. This is the majority opinion. Now, stop and identify statutes often combine elements of the traditional vagrancy law with provisions intended to regulate police behavior in the course of investigatory stops. The statutes vary from state to state, but all of them permit an officer to ask or require a suspect to disclose his identity. A few states model their statutes on the Uniform Arrest Act, a model code that permits an officer to stop a person reasonably suspected of committing a crime and then demand of him his name, address, business abroad, and whether he is going. Warner, the Uniform Arrest Act, 28 Virginia Law Review 315, back in 1942, and other statutes are based on the text proposed by the American Law Institute as part of the Institute's Model Penal Code. All ALI model penal codes comments and the provision originally designated 250.12 provides that a person who is loitering under circumstances which justify suspicion that he may be engaged or about to engage in crime commits a violation if he refuses the request of a peace officer that he identify himself and give a reasonably credible account of the lawfulness of his conduct and purposes. 250.12, tentative draft number 13, in some states, a suspect's refusal to identify himself is a misdemeanor offense or civil violation. In others, it is a factor to be considered in whether the suspect has violated loitering laws. In other states, a suspect may decline to identify himself without penalty. Stop and identify statutes have their roots in early English vagrancy laws that required suspected vagrants to face arrest unless they gave a good account of themselves. A power that itself reflected common law rights of private persons to arrest any suspicious night walker and then detain him until he gave a good account of himself. In recent decades, the court has found constitutional infirmity in these traditional vagrancy laws. In Papa Christou versus Jacksonville, the court held that a traditional vagrancy law was void for vagueness. That's void for vagueness. Its broad scope and its imprecise terms denied proper notice to potential offenders and permitted police officers to exercise unfettered discretion in the enforcement of the law. So let's understand something here. When a law is struck down as being unconstitutionally vague and ambiguous, what the court is saying is that that law won't stand constitutional muster, so you might as well rewrite it. In the Nevada statute, the court did not arrive at the conclusion that the Nevada statute that requires you to identify yourself is vague and ambiguous. In fact, they deliberately said that it was narrowly written, and because of its narrow and its preciseness, that it was probably constitutional. At least it's constitutional under Fourth and Fifth Amendment examination. If it's unconstitutional, then it has to be unconstitutional under some other analysis. And since Fourth and Fifth Amendment objections were raised by Heibel, then the factual circumstances surrounding his Fourth and Fifth Amendment claims must support those claims. In the Heibel case, they didn't. In Brown v. Texas, they did. And in Lawson v. Colander, they did. So then our job is to make sure that if we're ever in the circumstance where the police are asking for identification, that we have a reasonable belief that giving the policeman our names is going to violate our Fourth or Fifth Amendment rights. This can be accomplished by asking the officer a few simple questions, like, is this a Terry stop and frisk? When the officer says, well, yes, it is. Well, then, am I free to go? Well, if the officer said yes, walk away. If the officer says no, that generates the third question. If I give you my name, as you have requested, will this name then be used in any way against me in a subsequent criminal investigation? If the officer says yes, then I don't want to tell you anymore. If he says no, then it generates the next question. Now, I'll go through these questions and answers that establish whether or not this is a legitimate Fifth Amendment stop and frisk, or it's not. You know, if the officer says, I'm going to guarantee you immunity from prosecution, then you don't have any fear of prosecution. You can't apply the Fifth Amendment. In which case, why would you want to? If you know that giving your name is not going to be used against you, then there wouldn't be any reason for you not to give your name. And that's what the court is telling this fellow Heibel. You know, you didn't have any reason not to give your name, and so the law requires it. It's only in cases where you can reasonably show that you are fearful that the giving of your name will be testamentary evidence used against you. Now, the court has recognized similar constitutional limitations on the scope and operation of stop and identify statutes in Brown v. Texas. The court invalidated a conviction for violating a Texas stop and identify statute on Fourth Amendment grounds. Let's distinguish that. Notice the court has recognized similar constitutional limitations on the scope and operation of stop and identify statutes. So in Brown v. Texas, the court invalidated a conviction, not the statute. They invalidated the conviction for violating a Texas stop and identify statute on Fourth Amendment grounds. We'll do an analysis of Brown v. Texas a little later in our analysis. This is an important distinction. Notice that in the vagrancy laws, the court said, we declared those to be constitutionally vague and ambiguous. Those statutes were constitutionally unconstitutional. But the Texas statute, they did not say was unconstitutional. They said the way it was applied to this guy Brown was unconstitutional, not the statute itself. So the Nevada statute is constitutional. Heibel said it was unconstitutional and violated the Fourth and Fifth Amendments. The court's analysis was, no, it's not unconstitutional. Now, was it unconstitutional as it was applied in your case? And the court came to the second conclusion in their analysis and said, no, the way this statute was applied in this case was constitutional, number one, and it did not violate either the Fourth or Fifth Amendments as it applied to you, Mr. Heibel, number two. Therefore, you're guilty as charged. So the court ruled that the initial stop in Brown was not based on specific objective facts establishing reasonable suspicion to believe that the suspect Brown was involved in any criminal activity. Absent that factual basis for detaining the defendant, the court held the risk of arbitrary and abusive police practices was too great and the stop was impermissible. Four terms later, the court invalidated a modified stop and identified statute on vagueness grounds. So in Lawson versus Colander, the court said that the California statute was unconstitutional. In the Brown case, the court said that the application of the constitutional statute was unconstitutional as it applied to Brown. Very important distinction here. In Lawson versus Colander, the court determined that the statute was unconstitutional. In Brown versus Texas, they discovered or decided that the statute was constitutional, but it was unlawful in the way that it was applied to Brown. So the California law in Colander required a suspect to give an officer credible and reliable identification when asked to identify himself. The court held that the statute was void because it provided no standard for determining what a suspect must do to comply with it, resulting in virtually unrestrained power to arrest and charge persons with a violation. Well, we're about out of time for this session. Now, hang on, we'll be back tomorrow night with the same story here on Heibel versus the 6th Judicial District Court of Nevada, Humboldt County. Do you have to identify yourself to a police officer? Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week on Truth Radio Network and worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Gordon Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, we're out of time. We'll have to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, God willing, same time, same station. So until then, good night, friends.